Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, on this brisk December morning or afternoon. Yeah. And with me is my mother and co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
And a beautiful day it is. We were just remarking that when the sun is out and there's a little wind, it's not too bad.
Even though the temperature may be cold, we don't feel it.
No, it's that wind that does it.
Yeah. Well, we want to express our appreciation for Steve Cooperman, who filled in for us last week. He was the host for an Iowa City writer, Gregory Paul Johnson, who came down to Fairfield to talk about his book, Putting Your Life on a Diet, Lessons That He Learned from Living in a 140-square-foot Home.
Imagine that.
Yeah, it was a great interview and very interesting, so I'm sure our audience hopefully they missed us, but
of course they
got a good substitute.
Yeah.
Great. And we have a really fascinating guest with us today.
Yes, we do. And she's going to, she's on the air with, I mean, she's hooked up, right?
Yep, she's here.
I am here. I can't hear you very well, I'm sorry to say. It seems like you're very far away in a tunnel or something. And I'm only up in Canada, so I don't know why.
No.
I can't hear you too well.
Okay. Well, we'll try and speak a little louder. And
that'd be great.
Okay.
Okay.
So our guest today is Lori Pollock Kenlin. Lori is writes for national, regional, and local magazines and websites, and says she's living proof that dreams do come true if you don't mind bleeding, sweating, and crying. So Lori, so you're in Canada. Whereabouts in Canada?
I live on Bowen Island, which is a little island just off the coast of Vancouver, B.C., so we're about a 20-minute ferry ride from the city.
So you're close to the city, but in the country.
Exactly, and it's a very rural setting. I mean, I live on a half an acre, so outside of my office is our backyard, and there's ferns and trees and the forest and actually part of a mountain as well. So, yeah, it's very rural, which is good in a lot of ways, but it's also isolating in some ways, too.
Yeah, it is, but of course, when you can enjoy nature, so many people can't when they live in the city. They can't enjoy nature because they're, it's just not there.
Yeah, and I go to Vancouver every week, so I'll go to the city just to also get a taste of the energy because there's not the same, like it's a different energy on the island. So I go into the city just to walk around the downtown core, and it's just pulsing, kind of like New York City or Toronto, or I don't know about Los Angeles because I've never been there, but there's a different rhythm when there's, a lot of traffic and a lot of cars and people. There's energy and creativity there.
Now,
I need that, so I go across every week to soak it up.
I visited Vancouver for the first time this past summer.
Oh, how'd you like it?
I loved it. I stayed in Kitsilano at a bed and breakfast, and not too far from kind of where the action is on 9th Street and 4th Street down there, and it was great.
Yeah, that's a wonderful area, in particular, that area. Did you go to Stanley Park?
We did. We went to Stanley Park. We went across onto the north side and up to the swinging bridge.
Yeah, and Capilano Suspension Bridge.
Yep, the Capilano Suspension Bridge. We went to the Queen Elizabeth Park. We went to the University of British Columbia, to the Museum of Anthropology, which was fantastic. We went over to Vancouver Island to Bouchard Gardens. And
you got around, didn't you?
Yeah, it was.
That's great.
It was really a great experience. So, well, Lori's writing has appeared in Women's Day, Reader's Digest, GLOW, Spirituality and Health, and many more. And she also writes two blogs.
Blogs. I actually have three now.
Three blogs. Okay. Why don't you tell our listeners about your blogs?
Well, they're all based on the same theme, which is quips and tips. So the first one that I started was quips and tips for freelance writers. And that just pairs inspirational quotations from published writers with practical writing tips. So last night I just posted an article, and I used Mark Twain. He had a really interesting quote, so I used his quip and then posted about interviewing experts for articles. Like, and that particular post was about whether you should email your experts or your sources, or whether you should talk to them on the phone or visit them in person when you're writing an article. So the whole idea of that quips and tips for freelance writers is to give people inspiration through the quotation and also practical tips to achieve your goals in writing. And then the second one is quips and tips for achieving your goals. And that's more of a general, broad-based goal-setting blog. So I like to write, I especially like to write about health and fitness. So I write, you know, 10 ways to achieve your health and fitness goals, or 10 ways to achieve your financial goals at Christmas. And then the third one is quips and tips for couples coping with infertility. And it's, again, the same idea where you have a quip that starts out the blog post, and then tips for dealing with infertility or trying to get pregnant or relationship struggles when you are dealing with infertility. And each blog post on all my quips and tips sites have a book like that I highlight in that blog post. So I'll profile a book and get information from the book to give people information for their lives. So that's it in a nutshell.
How long have you been doing these?
Those, it's just been since June. I started Quips and Tips for Freelance Writers in June, and then in the summer was Quips and Tips for Achieving Your Goals, and then just about a month ago was Quips and Tips for Couples Coping with Infertility. And my dream is to have just a series of these quips and tips blogs. Quips and tips for Christians, I thought that would be maybe my next one, or, you know, like there's just so many different areas that you could go in. And I love doing it. I love the idea of the practical inspirational quips or quotations paired with life tips, and also paired with a book that people can go to get even more information than what I offer.
Yeah, that's so good.
I just love it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Now, Lori, how much time do you have to invest in this, and how often do you post on each of these?
Well, I'm a full-time freelance writer, so I try and divide my time between earning enough money to live full-time. So my goal as a writer is to earn a living. That's how I see a successful writer for my own life. So what I have to do is balance getting article assignments, which, you know, pay quite well depending on who you're writing for, with writing for my blogs. And my blogs don't pay a lot. So if I had my druthers, I would definitely be writing for my blog just doing that. But I have to write to, you know, earn a living. So it's probably about 20% of the time I work on my blogs, and 80% of the time I'm pitching ideas and working on articles. But the articles, it's really important to work on the articles and work with other people, because if I was just writing for myself, like just blogging, then I wouldn't be learning how to write better or write tighter or come up with good ideas. I'm really finding that the editors that I work with they help me by editing my stuff and making me redo certain portions and getting more information up from a certain expert. So I think it's important to have other people's input into your writing and not just blog for yourself or write for yourself.
Yeah. Well, Lori, I think your attitude about editors is very is professional, and it's very beneficial. But do you ever find yourself resisting an editor's comments at first before you accept them?
You know, I never have. And I don't know if that's because I write nonfiction and I write health and wellness-based articles. So I just find it very helpful, and I appreciate their guidance because they make my writing better, because I can look at my article as I submitted it, and then after, if they tweak it, because they don't always tweak it, but if they do give me suggestions and make me redo stuff, I look at it after, and you can tell the difference. Like, you can tell that they've made it better. And what has happened also is that they won't tell me to do changes, so I'll hand in the article, and they'll say, yeah, that's great, and then they'll publish it, but they'll make their own changes. And that's something that I like less. Like, I don't like that when they make the changes to my article, because I didn't make those changes, and it's just something that they've added, and my name is still on the article. So that's one pet, not really a pet peeve, because it doesn't happen too often, but I appreciate when they ask me to make changes. So I don't mind that.
And they can do that. They can change it without your permission.
Yeah, they don't change major stuff. Like, they'll just maybe add an extra comma or add an extra, you know, like, they won't make anything different or add to what my sources have said.
Okay.
But
so
they could take two of my sentences and make it into one.
So the
stuff like that.
So the integrity of the piece is not compromised then?
Never. Okay. No, they've never done that.
Okay, good.
So, Lori, did you always want to be a writer?
Well, sort of. I wanted to be a psychologist, and I wanted to be a teacher, and a lawyer, and a vet. I wanted to be a pastor for a while, and I wanted to be a writer. And
when you grow up, you're going to do these
really
things.
I want to do lots of different things. I want to experience lots of different lives. And so what I've had, what's been really great about the writing as a nonfiction writer, and it could happen for fiction writers as well, is that I get to talk to all these different people and learn about all these different lives that, you know, I can't live because you can only do so much in one lifetime. So I never thought that I could be a writer. I never thought that I could earn a living or, you know, become published. So I never really had it as a achievable goal. But I always thought I could probably be a psychologist or a teacher or a doctor. So those were more realistic for me.
So how did you come to believe that you could be a full-time writer and make a living that way? What was your path to getting to there?
You know, I think I just kept trying. Like, even at the beginning, I didn't think I could earn a living as a full-time writer. And this is my first year as a full-time writer, and I've surpassed my goals. Like, I set financial goals for each month, and I've overreached those goals, which is excellent. But I'm not even sure what the turning point is. I think it was always in the back of my mind that I want to be a writer, and I did play around with it. Like, so for the last 10 years, I've been pitching book proposals to editors and to book publishers, and not really writing for publications, but just sort of pitching book proposals. And those were never successful, but I always got enough of interest. Like, they'd write back and say, well, yeah, it's not quite right for us, but, you know, good luck. So I always took that as a bit of inspiration or encouragement.
Right, right.
And then I think it just built on from there. And I don't know what the tipping point was. Like, I think part of it was that I got married, and we moved to Bowen Island, and I decided, okay, I'm going to do writing half-time, like part-time writing, and I'll work on the island part-time as in an office. And then that, I began to get better and better at the writing, and I was getting more and more assignments and realizing, well, if I could put full-time effort into my writing, I could be earning a full-time living. So it really just happened very slowly. It was kind of a process that one thing led to another.
Well, you were involved in a lot of different things on the island and in other places too, and so that's a good experience for a writer, isn't it? I mean, like the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Calgary, and you know, that's a marvelous organization. And
that was great, and that's my second favorite job. Like, writing has been my absolute career dream, but working with Big Brothers and Big Sisters is a close second because I was a mentoring coordinator, so I would match bigs and littles and then help them have a healthy, effective relationship. And I loved doing that. Like, that was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
But the writing, yeah, is kind of surpassed that.
Because
and I've also, like, I do have a teaching degree. I have an education degree as well as a psychology degree. So I worked as a teacher for 3 years in Africa. So I taught at an American school in Africa for 3 years. And then I worked with social services. And I've really done a lot of jobs because I could never really figure out what I wanted to do, and I always thought everything has its pros and cons. Like, everything is so interesting and can have its negatives.
Sure.
So I really wanted to try lots of things, and I was able to do that. And that does make me a better writer.
Oh, yes, because you have all that experience to draw on. I was just wondering, when do you sleep, you know?
Well, you know, like, I don't have kids. We don't have kids. So I do have more time than a mother would, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm also, because we live on the island, we're not going to the mall, and we're not, you know, like, shopping, and I don't know, like, I just have a very simple lifestyle. I don't really go out a lot, which gives me more time to work.
But you have these past experiences to draw on, so that's, you know, that's good. It's good that you did all those things while you could do it.
That's right.
Yeah,
because that does give me the experience and even the creativity. continue.
Well, you're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Lori Pollock Kenlin from British Columbia. Lori, how did you first start getting published in magazines?
I just sent ideas. Like, I would just contact the editor and email them and say, you know, would you like me to write a article about this particular thing? And I knew from my research, like from writing about or from reading about writing, that you shouldn't send in an already written article, which is called on spec. So you're not supposed to send in the pre-written article because the editor might have a different idea of how they want it to look or who you should interview for that article. So I just sent in these pitches saying, hey, I want to write this article on this particular thing, and I think it should be 1,000 words, and I can have it to you within 3 weeks. And then I just wait and see. And I would send, you know, 15 or 20 of those a week.
Did you start with smaller publications, regional,
yeah,
local?
Because those are definitely easier to find the email addresses for, or the addresses and the editors' names, because you want to pitch to a particular editor. So it was easier to find the people who, yeah, the smaller publications.
And then once you had been successful in the smaller publications, do you use that as a launching pad to get into the larger ones?
Yeah, absolutely. And they can tell, like I've read and I now know from experience, that an editor can tell just by the way you write your pitch, like a one-page pitch, even three-quarters of a page can tell them what kind of a writer you are, because your voice and your style comes through, and it can tell them how research oriented you are and how serious you are about writing. So you don't even need to send the whole article or anything. You just need to send in a little, you know, one-page pitch, and that tells them a lot.
Now, Lori, you are going to share with us an example of a pitch and then how it becomes converted to an article.
I was going to share this one example, but then I realized that because I knew him at the time, it was a very bad example, but I'll just tell you. So all I said was, hi, editor, and this is for MSNHealth.com, so I love writing for them. I write for them fairly regularly, and once you build in a relationship with the editor or a publication, all I have to do now is say, Peter, his name is Peter, I hear how about an article called The 10 Most Unusual Jobs in Medicine? And then I put, for example, eyeball painter. And I explain a little bit about how an ocularist or an artificial eye maker does his or her job. And then, so that's just a paragraph, two or three sentences about this eyeball painter. And then I say, in 1,000 words, this article is going to highlight 10 unusual jobs in medicine, from semen washers to deaners, who are technicians who prepare bodies for autopsies. And then I say, would you be interested in this for MSN Health? And best regards, and Lori. So that's an example of when a pitch that you'd give to someone that you've worked with a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's, what, three paragraphs. It's
right.
Just hardly anything because they've already worked with you and they know you.
So, but if you're going in cold, you need a slightly more extensive proposal?
Yeah, if you're going in cold, you need to explain a little bit more about who you are and why you want to do this. And now I'm just trying to, because I didn't prepare one. I actually put some on my website, the ones that I've done cold.
Mm-hmm.
That way people can actually see, you know, what, for example, so my quips and tips for freelance writers. And right now I'm just coming up with one. Okay. Here's one that I'd love to do, and I probably shouldn't say this on the radio because I haven't sold this one, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
So no one can steal this idea, because if I find out you've stolen this idea, I'll be really mad. Okay, so this is the one that I'd love to write, and I haven't sold it yet. I said, Dear Nikki, and this is an editor for Skirt magazine, last week I told a client I'd have his puppy in the mail as soon as possible. Says Brianne Cloutis, co-creator of Tiny Revolutionary, a green kids clothing company. My little girl was talking to her fake puppy while I wrote the email, which was supposed to be about sending a sample. Yikes, but we've all done it. Moving at rocket speed, pounding out one last email before charging back to the family, and neglecting to reread before hitting send. We do it both in both business and personal correspondence. Sometimes the mistakes are funny and easy to remedy. Other times, email blunders have disastrous consequences. In 1,000 words, recovering from email blunders will describe 8 to 10 embarrassing, funny, and unusual email mistakes. Each blunder comes with a suggestion for how the emailers recovered their reputations and relationships. The suggestions for fixing blunders will be applicable to readers, and a variety of situations will be included, for instance, family, work, friends, and volunteer. If you'd like a sidebar, I can include a 400-word email etiquette and or an email trends blurb offering current info from e-experts or email experts. Are you interested in this article or a version of it for SCIRT? If so, I can have it to you within 3 weeks of assignment. I'm a published writer. Visit theadventurouswriter.com for links to my most recent articles. My credits include MSN Health, Health Magazine, Women's Day, Reader's Digest, GLOW, and more. I'm the feature writer for psychology at Suite 101, and my degrees are in psychology and education. Best regards, Lori Pollock Kenlin.
Wow.
So, Lori, how would you go about getting those samples of email blunders?
Then we have these wonderful resources. I use two in particular. One is called ProfNet, and the other one is called HARO, which is Help a Reporter Out. And both websites join reporters or journalists or writers with sources. So the reporter goes on and says, okay, I'm writing an article about email blunders, and I need people to email me and tell me if they've ever, you know, sent an email by accident that said the wrong thing or send it to the wrong person. And then all these sources, for their own reasons, are looking through all these requests from the reporters and saying, hey, you know, I have sent an email blunder by accident, and this is how it worked for me, and they email you. And often the people who are on those sites who are experts or sources, they've written books, or they're trying to sell their products, or they're a psychologist at a university even who wants to, you know, just increase their visibility in marketing. So they'll approach you, and so then you just can email or, you know, interview them either over the phone or over email.
So they're trying to establish their expertise for one reason or another, and you get to take advantage of that as a writer.
It's such a great...
It's a win-win.
I love those two websites because they, you know, it just puts you in touch with real people.
What are those again? Prof.net?
Profnet.com.
Oh, ProfNet. Okay.
And then HARO, it's Help a Reporter Out. The only drawback with those is that you are running into people who have... not really an ulterior motive, but they want to sell something of their own, right?
Right.
And often, you know, there's publicists on there who are working for clients. So you don't really have, like, clean people in the sense that you don't have people off the street who it just happened to. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
it's,
right. They have an
that's
agenda.
Harder to find. It is harder to find people, just
sure.
Generally, just people out in the public who can give you their idea, their experiences.
Right.
I love your website, adventurouswriter.com.
Yeah, and that's something I struggled with because I didn't know if I should create it because I thought it was kind of egotistical to have your own website like and just have all the list of stuff you've done. I thought it was kind of bragging. And after I did it, I realized how important it is to have one central location where you showcase what you've done, you showcase your work, and that way editors and publishers and readers can go to it and just see all the stuff that you've done and have all those different links. So
well, it does make it easier, I'm assuming, for the editors to know whether or not you really are what you say you are. You know, you might send a fantastic pitch letter, but, you know, not have the persistence to actually finish the article, and this way they can see that you've really done it.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. And they can also see your style of writing, and they can see the last time you've written an article. I mean, I try to update my website every month, so I always have current articles, but if you haven't written since, you know, 1982, things are going to be different over the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
So it's good to show them that you're current.
Now, Lori, you write for print publications, but you also write for some online publications. Is there a difference in approaching those two or in the style of writing that each of those requires?
Most of the time, the online publications don't require an introduction. They generally like you to have a title, and then you just jump right into whatever your point is. But with the print, you definitely need to hook your writer and draw them in, because they're, you know, like flipping through the magazine, or they haven't even bought the magazine and they're standing at the checkout counter and they don't know for sure if they're going to buy it. So you really have to be more creative in drawing people in for the print magazine.
Hmm. Okay.
But the online, yeah, is a little less flowery.
Is the proliferation of online publications, has that helped writers expanded
Absolutely,
the market?
Because it gives you more resource or more places to write for.
Right.
I mean, with Reader's Digest, I pitch article ideas to the print Reader's Digest editor, and I can pitch article ideas to the online Reader's Digest editor, and then there's a third editor who just works on a different section of the print. So actually, I have three editors at Reader's Digest, and that's just Reader's Digest Canada. I haven't even tried Reader's Digest America yet, because I just really haven't had time to get there, you know? So it actually could double. Like, for that one publication, it's doubled my chances of getting published.
Now, is this pay scale similar, or is it different for online as opposed to print?
It's a little less for online. I mean, I can still earn a dollar a word online, which is a fabulous, like, I'm very happy with getting a dollar a word. But I don't think they'd ever pay as much as $2 a word, which there's a one publication I write for that pays $2 a word, which I am, you know, like, it blows me away that they would pay that much.
Yeah, especially when the words the.
Do that.
Yeah, the. Yeah. That's tremendous.
Wow. Now, with your blog, the quips and tips for freelance writers, excuse me, in some sense you're training your competitors. Why'd you decide to do that?
That's really interesting. I hadn't even thought about it like that. So I think it's, I like the idea of sharing what I've learned. I mean, I've learned a lot over the past. I've only been freelance writing, it hasn't even been 3 years yet. So it's been, I think, 2.5 years. And I didn't find a lot of sites where I learned stuff. I mean, there are a couple. Like, there's one called Writing World, which is a fabulous, amazing site. I learned a lot there. But there weren't a lot of blogs or websites. So I don't know. I just wanted to teach what I know. And I do have an ulterior motive as well, because I have ads on all three of my sites. And that, you know, I can earn money that way. So it's not just,
and that would,
just doing it out of the goodness of my own heart.
And the more people that come and see the sites, the more the advertising is worth. Right? Like by driving more viewers,
yeah,
getting known. Because I think that, you know, it's possible to actually make a living as a blogger if you become popular enough and have enough people reading what you're writing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I read about that a lot now, too. In fact, now I'm reading more about blogging and getting out there as a blogger than I am about writing. Like, I used to read about writing all the time, and I just realized earlier today that, hey, I haven't read a writing book in a long time. But I was learning today about how to be a more effective blogger and to get more traffic, because the more traffic you have, yeah, the more you can potentially earn.
Right.
And I wanted to also, I don't want to just have a blog where I talk about my life or my writing process or my writing, you know, like I want to be practical and helpful. I think that's my ultimate goal as a writer. And even with the quips and tips, like, it's very practical, helpful stuff that can improve people's lives, and that's my dream.
Now, as a writer, do you focus on some pretty kind of some general areas, but you don't write about just anything? You tend to focus on these particular areas. Is that true?
Yeah, I love writing about health. I'm finding the more I write about health, the more I enjoy it. And it's very particular, detailed work. Like, you have to be very technical and careful about what you say. So it's not like writing about, eco-friendly Easter. I did that article for Reader's Digest, and I'm just finding that there's a big difference between writing, say, an article about the benefits of breast cancer. I just finished one, and I submitted it today to Health Magazine about how certain treatments for breast cancer, like chemotherapy and acupuncture, can actually improve your health in the long run. And that was a very, like,
wow.
It took them a while to decide that they wanted to assign that, because it's a very detailed, technical article that, you know, like, that just requires more thought and more care. so now I don't remember what the original question was.
Well, about specializing in one area. How do you?
Oh, right, the specialty, yeah, right. The health I love.
How do you come up with ideas in the health arena? Because it seems like everything must have been written about already.
There's always new research that's coming out, and like with the chemotherapy improving some aspects of a woman's health, like that's new research that they didn't know 5 years ago or even, you know, 2 years ago. So there's always new stuff, and so there's always new twists.
And how do you find out about this stuff? Do you subscribe to certain, like, scientific journals
No, not the journal itself, because then you're too narrow. It's too focused. Mm-hmm. But what I have are two websites where I get information. One is Science Daily, and so what they do is they send me an email every morning of, it must be about 40 different research findings that are just coming out. So what they do is they gather research from all these different universities all over the world and other institutions like hospitals and places like that who are doing research. And then they amalgamate it into one email for me, and then they send it, and then I can go in to that website, to the university or whatever, and get more information. And then Eureka Alerts is also really good for, they do the same thing, basically. They just gather all the information from different organizations.
Wow, that sounds... What did we do before the Internet?
I don't know.
I wonder, you know, even with a laptop, like, I don't know how, if I could retype all the time. I don't know how people did it before. And sending stuff, like, you'd have to be mailing your queries and your pitches in all the time.
Yep.
So now I can, you know, pump out, what, 10 or 15 a week or even 5 or 6 a day email queries. But you could, I guess you could still do that over paper, but it just is so much quicker and more efficient now.
It would get pretty expensive, too, with the postage. And you used to not only have to put the postage on, but you had to put return postage if you wanted to hear back. If you wanted
a response.
And you
still have to do that in a lot of cases. When you send out to publishers, you still have to put in, you know, a self-addressed stamped envelope so that they can respond to you. And I actually don't do that. Like, the last time that I sent out my book proposal ideas, I didn't bother doing that because I thought, well, if they're interested, they'll email me. And if they're not interested, they'll just recycle it.
That's true.
So what is this book idea?
I don't know. Is someone going to steal that?
No, you don't have to tell us.
It's actually done because you never
know. You don't have to tell us.
Right.
But that's true. That's true.
An agent in New York City. His name is John, Sternum is his name. And he's with Irene Goodman Literary Agency. Because I decided that I didn't want to keep sending out this book proposal because I had a publisher in Toronto who thought about it for, I don't know, 6 months and finally decided that they wanted me to write more of it before they gave me a contract. And I said, well, I can't. Like, it's just too research intensive to spend my time writing. I want a contract before I write the book. So then I thought, well, I have to get an agent because I can't spend all my time, you know, not all my time, but I don't want to spend time sending out these book proposals. So I sent an email to 15 different agents in both America and Canada, and 2 responded with contracts, which is so great. Like, I was really lucky with that. And so now this New York agent, John, is pitching my book proposal.
Well, congratulations.
The book proposal is it's 200 mini biographies of amazing women in history. So I've got 200 very short descriptions of, you know, women who've really accomplished a lot. And then I add a life tip to each of the 200 women, kind of like a magazine sidebar, you know, like a sidebar you see in a magazine, 5 ways to achieve your goals or 5 ways to be healthier. So then that way you're not just reading a little blurb about Amelia Earhart, say, or Hillary Clinton, but then you're actually taking the life tip. Like, there's actually a life application that you can apply to your own life. So that's I'd love to publish that book. That's called See Jane Soar.
So that's your goal for 2009?
Well, yeah, to get someone to buy it, and then maybe published in 2010, because it's going to take a while to research 200 women.
That's true.
Write the book.
Well, you're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Lori Pollack Kenlin, who is a freelance writer from Canada, who's written for many, many publications specializing in the areas of health and tips for freelance writers, among other things.
I want to ask her about this book idea. Where would you go to find information about these women? I mean, some of them, it's going to be in the past a little bit, right?
Yeah, so I'd have to access, you know, what's been previously written. Like with Amelia Earhart, I read, I think, 3 books and found some really interesting stuff. Like she was married to publisher George Putnam.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And she wrote 2 books of herself, and she was the aviation editor for Cosmo magazine. Like, she was amazing, and she never had kids, and it was just amazing what she did that people don't even realize.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I'd have to read a lot, access books, and I also thought I could talk to university instructors who, you know, some people they're historians, and mm-hmm. they might have a lot of really good information that's not even published yet, but it's still true.
Yeah. Well, that would be the fun part of it, would be, you know, trying to find out all these things, I would think.
And the creative part would be pulling the life tip relates to each one.
Yeah.
That would be very creative.
Yeah, and I want them to be relevant and practical. Like, you know, not just, oh, follow your heart or you have to work hard. How are you going to achieve your goals? Like, what are the 5 steps? What are 5 steps to becoming a published writer or, I don't know, getting married or whatever your goal is?
or a world famous aviator.
Now, Lori, you do have an article that you were going to share with our listeners today that I think we should get to now before we run out of time.
And was that, there was 2 that I had suggested. One was a contest entry that I had written about being addicted to writing.
Yeah, I think that was the one.
Okay. I don't know how much time do we have?
We have about 15 minutes left. How long do you think that'll take?
I think it won't take 15 minutes, but I just didn't want to, you know, take
up time
doing this. So if you get bored, just interrupt me.
Okay.
Not a big fan of reading my writing. And I have joined a couple. Well, I was part of one writing group, and the thing I disliked the most was reading my writing. It's hard to read it out loud because it's meant to be read.
Right. Well, if you have something shorter that you'd rather share.
I'm not just reading my writing out loud, but also just reading any writing because it really is for the page. But, okay, so this is a contest entry. I wrote this for a writing contest that I didn't win, and I thought for sure I would at least get, you know, 2nd or 3rd, but I didn't. And it's about, it's based on a real argument. It's not really an argument, but a real discussion my husband and I have every single day. Called, but honey, all real writers do this. Dear Bruce, I promise, I'm coming to bed right away. My Reader's Digest article is almost edited, but first I have to tell you what I found. It'll finally settle our argument. You're probably sawing logs by now. I can't believe it's already 2 a.m. I'm jotting it down so I don't forget. You claim I'm addicted to writing. Well, I was surfing Alice's website. She's the addictions counselor we met at the Andersons, remember? The tall brunette married to the undercover narc. And I found a list of characteristics on her website that describes addictive behavior. It proves I'm not addicted to writing. I'm simply tenacious, as all freelancers must be. I've dedicated myself to my craft, as all real writers must do. On Alice's list, it says, the person is struggling with addiction if at least 3 of the following 5 behaviors are evident. Prepare to eat some humble pie, darling husband, because none of these apply to me. Number 1, the person recognizes excessive use of the substance and may have tried to reduce it but was unable to do so. Okay, writing 12 hours a day may seem slightly excessive to outsiders, but I can stop any time. Bruce, I can hear you already. But you don't stop, Lori. You work on weekends, in the evenings when we're watching a movie, and when we go on vacation. You write at Christmas when we're visiting my parents, and you sneak away to work when we have overnight guests. I'm not saying I do stop any time. I'm saying I could stop any time. Remember our wedding day? I didn't write a word. You should be thankful I'm not like Annie Dillard. Talk about addicted to writing. Let the grass die, she said. I let almost all my indoor plants die from neglect while I was writing the book. There are all kinds of ways to live. You can keep a tidy house, and when St. Peter asks you what you did with your life, you can say, I kept a tidy house, and I made my own cheese balls. Honey, if you didn't keep the house tidy and water the plants, I most certainly would. The second characteristic of addiction. The person has given up or reduced many activities, such as socializing, recreation, and work, because of the substance use. Sorry, but this characteristic doesn't apply to real writers because we have to give up or cut back on superfluous activities. That's the nature of the beast. Listen to Jessamine West. She's a writer. Writing is a solitary occupation. Family, friends, and society are the natural enemies of the writer. He must be alone, uninterrupted, and slightly savage if he is to sustain and complete an undertaking. See? Don't get me wrong, I'm not declaring war at home, and I haven't targeted you as my enemy, though I was admittedly a little hostile when I discovered you eating Cheetos while using my laptop. I'm just saying that giving up certain activities is part of a real writer's life. Plus, visiting the dentist every 6 months is highly overrated. Natalie Goldberg said that writers have to stick to their schedules. I hear people say they're going to write, says Natalie. I ask when, and they give me vague statements. Indefinite plans get dubious results. Mm. When we're concrete about our writing time, it alleviates that thin, constant feeling of anxiety that writers have. We're barbecuing hot dogs, riding a bike, sailing out in the bay, shopping for shoes, even helping a sick friend. But somewhere nervously at the periphery of our perception, we know we belong somewhere else, at our desk. Bruce, though you say my writing schedule is too rigid, Natalie Goldberg recommends discipline. But listen, do it all for you. You want to retire early, don't you? That's why I work so hard. One day we'll be living off my online revenues and my book royalties. So that means I'm not addicted to writing. I'm simply securing our future together because I love you so much. At least I'm not as unyielding as Erica Jong. She said, the most important thing for a writer is to be locked in a study. I don't even have a study. The third characteristic of addiction is that the person shows signs of tolerance, indicated by larger doses of the substance needed to produce the desired effect, and the effects of the drug becoming markedly less if only the usual amount is taken. Yes, Bruce, I recall that when we were first married, I wrote for only 7 or 8 hours a day. But we were newlyweds. Now that we're established, I work 12 hours a day because we don't need to spend quite so much time together. Plus, it's not the quantity of hours that matter. It's the quality, right? It's not like I write in the dark, like Henry David Thoreau did. I put a piece under my pillow, said Thoreau, and when I could not sleep, I wrote in the dark. Mm. And I don't write in the moonlight with bleeding fingers. All good writing is built one good line at a time, said Kate Braverman. You build a novel the same way you build a pyramid. One word, one stone at a time, underneath a full moon, while the fingers bleed. See my fingers? Clean. The fourth characteristic of addiction is that withdrawal symptoms develop when the person stops taking the substance or reduces the amount. The person may also use the substance to relieve or avoid withdrawal symptoms. Alice, our addictions counselor, said that addicts need drugs to function and cope with daily life, especially when they're going through withdrawal. Bruce, honey, please don't remind me yet again of when I compared writing to mainlining crack cocaine. I was kidding. Before I eat breakfast, I don't need to write 200 words, edit yesterday's work, research story ideas, update my website, scan my blog stats, send 2 new pitches, and check my emails. That's simply my morning ritual, and all real writers have rituals. It has nothing to do with withdrawal or the fact that I haven't written a word all night, and I'm scared of losing momentum and turning 90 years old without seeing my writing or book dreams come true. Need I remind you once again that I didn't write on our wedding day. And I didn't write the day after that either, when we flew to St. Martin. But I had to write on our honeymoon because of Ray Bradbury. Bradbury said, if you did not write every day, the poisons would accumulate and you would begin to die or act crazy or both. You must stay drunk on writing so reality cannot destroy you. See how important it is for me to write every day? Otherwise, I'd be drowning in physical and psychological toxins. Can you imagine if I didn't write? By the way, you could forget about using the drunk on writing part to argue that writing is addictive or mood-altering. I'm way ahead of you. The fifth characteristic of addiction is that the person continues the substance despite psychological or physical problems caused or made worse by the drug. This last characteristic just doesn't apply to writers at all. Words aren't drugs. They don't control you or affect you physically or make you feel any particular way. Words don't captivate or mesmerize or take you to different worlds. Okay, fine, yes, they do all those things. But still, words aren't drugs. When Rudyard Kipling said, "Words are, of course, the most powerful drug used by mankind," he wasn't referring to the effect they have on writers. He meant readers, maybe poets, perhaps even novelists or essayists, but definitely not freelancers. Finally, honey, we agree. I'm not addicted to writing. Hey, that gives me a great idea for an article. How to recognize when your spouse is addicted. I only wish I would have thought of it sooner, so you could have seen the truth years ago and we wouldn't have wasted so much time arguing. I better outline a query right away. I think Heidi at Women's Day would be interested, and I want to email her first thing in the morning, like all real writers do. Okay, I'm coming to bed as soon as I finish writing this pitch, Heidi. I promise. XOXO, Lori. Yeah, like, I can see now why I didn't win, but it's got potential. Like, it's kind of a neat, you know,
now,
way to show that you're addicted to writing when your husband says you're not.
Right, right.
Add in a few quips from published writers.
Yeah, I like the way you incorporate the quotes from other people. That's, you know, we're very fond of quotes, too. Caroline's got quite a collection of them, and we actually end every show with a quote.
Oh, really? Yeah, oh, that's neat.
Yeah. And it's really, really nice the way that you bring them in and relate them to something in your own life. Relate the quotes to what's going on in your own life.
Yeah, that was very
clever.
Again,
I wanted it to be sort of practical that, you know, people could kind of relate to, especially other writers. So I didn't want to just talk about how, you know, I'm addicted to writing but won't accept it or believe it.
Well, this is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Lori Pollock Kenlin. And Lori is a freelance writer who's been published many print and online publications. Lori, what are some of the best things about writing as a career for you?
Well, I'm just trying to think. I wrote down this answer because I knew that I would not remember. I love the creativity, isolation, and independence that writing offers me, but those are also downsides. It's hard to be creative constantly when you're by yourself. And I once read this article in Psychology Today, and the writer argued that people who live in cities actually are more creative than people who live in towns or islands like I'm on because of the energy. And not just the energy, but when you're walking around in a city, you see stuff that gives you ideas, and you see, you know, people who are talking to themselves or, you know, high-profile businessmen and businesswomen and people talking on cell phones, and there's just tourists, and there's so much going on that spurs your creativity. So, getting back to what I love about writing is I love the creativity aspect, but I do find it hard sometimes, you know, to be creative, especially when I'm so isolated, not just as a writer, but isolated on my island. But I love the isolation because I'm an introvert and I really find it draining to be around other people. So the more I'm by myself, the happier I am. But there's a point that you start getting, even me as an introvert, I start getting cabin fever, and I need to talk to people and be around other people. So, and that's why I have to go to Vancouver every week just to get out of the house, like to pull away from my office. So I love the creativity and the isolation, but I also find that I struggle with it. And I love the independence as well. Like I was okay working with other people and having a boss, but I really like setting my own structure for the day, and I'm incredibly driven. Like, I'm very motivated, so I don't slack off. Like, I work a lot, so I work really hard. So,
but not addicted.
Sure.
In your article, you talked about having a morning ritual. Is that really what your routine really is like, or was that exaggerated?
No, I do that. Like, Bruce, my husband, he has to catch the ferry at, he leaves the house at 6 a.m. And what I like to do is get up at 5, and I like to have all that stuff that I listed. Like, I like to check my blog stats, and I like to check my email, and there's a bunch of stuff I like to get out of the way before I help him get off to work. Because cause he gets up at 5:30, and I like to make his oatmeal, so he takes it and he eats it on the ferry. Like, he takes it in a little Tupperware, and then that way he doesn't have to get up even earlier to have breakfast before he leaves. So I like to get my those little task stuff done before I get him off to work, because I don't know, it's just a something I like to have done before I get him off. And then I find when I get him off and then do all those things that I listed, mm-hmm. and it's not real writing, it's just those little pesky details that I need to do. If I have to do that after he leaves, then I feel like I'm behind, even though it's only 6 a.m. or 6:05.
I
feel like I'm sort of behind the eight ball for the day. I don't know. It's just a thing that I like to do.
So when do you, after he leaves, do you get right to work then, or do you,
yes.
like, at least get dressed, or...
No, as soon as I get out of bed, I just throw on my sweats and my sweatshirt, and that's, you know, all I need to do. So I'm writing from, I like to get up at 5, and I'm working till 5
wow.
until he gets home. But I take breaks during the day. Like, I go for a run every day out in the forest, so, and that's really important. So after 5 or 6 hours in front of the computer, I need air. I need to move around.
Well, it does seem like you're accomplishing a lot as a freelancer, and I can see why with this kind of schedule, that and the persistence that you've shown. It's really quite
amazing.
Yeah, and
it doesn't even—it's not hard. That's the weird thing. It's like I don't even set my alarm. Like at 5 a.m., my eyes are bing. I can't wait to see what my blog did overnight, and I can't wait to see what emails came in. And I love it. It's just—it's not even work. It's just something that it's just. I'm just passionate about.
Now, Lori, as a nonfiction writer, do you feel like that type of writing allows you to express your full creativity, or do you have any hankerings to write fiction?
I don't know about fiction. Like, I never wanted to be a blogger, and I still don't really think I'm a blogger, even though I have 3 blogs, because I don't write about my own life in those blogs or my own opinions. And I never really wanted to be a magazine writer as well, yet that's how I'm earning my living. So I always thought that I would. I didn't think I'd write fiction, but I thought I'd write nonfiction books that inspired and encouraged people. And that's still my dream. Like, that's still what I want to do. But it's incredibly hard to get published, especially now. Like, America, you guys have a huge, you know, economic, rocky road.
Yeah.
It's hard right now. And it's not that hard in Canada. Like, I think we're a little bit stronger economically right now, but we still don't have a lot of publishing companies that are taking books, like, that are publishing books. So my dream would be to, you know, like, to be fully creative and write books. I would love to do that. But I think, you know, you have to be realistic. And if you want to earn a living, then you got to do what you have to do.
Well, of course, your articles.
Nonfiction writing does allow me to express my creativity, because my ideas, like, I get to come up with my ideas. And the way that I twist something that's old, like, say, losing weight, you know, you can be totally creative in coming up with new ways to write articles about losing weight that hasn't been done.
Like, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah, hard to imagine. But just think of the good that you do with your articles for people, because a lot of people don't like to read a whole book. They just want to read an article. And
yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's a good point.
You're reaching many more people with your articles than you would be able, you know, you have to sell thousands and thousands of books. And so I think that's great. I really
do.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That is true. Now, do you ever experience writer's block?
No. I never have. I mean,
wow.
I think there was one day a couple months ago where I was like, or maybe it was a week that I wasn't like, you know, I have no ideas. I have no more ideas. I don't know what to do.
Learning
that the more that you come up with ideas and the more that you know how your ideas are generated, the easier it is. It's totally like a muscle. Like, being creative and coming up with interesting ideas for articles and books is a muscle that the more that you exercise it, the easier it is. Like, it's just, you know, now it's like, okay, I need an idea. And, you know, I'd like to have an idea before I go for my run at 10:30, so I've got 20 minutes. And you can do it. Like, I can come up with a good idea in 20 minutes.
Wow.
And that doesn't mean that it's going to sell. Like, it doesn't mean an editor is going to buy it right away. But other times they do. Like, sometimes they do buy it 2 days later or even that same day. So, yeah, you just... Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that now.
Well, that's fine. But, Lori, we have to close in a minute or so, and I just want to know if you have any, like, final words of advice for an aspiring writer.
One thing that's really important is to read actively, like, and read in the genre that you want to be published in or that you dream of writing in. And what I mean by active is, you know, notice how the writer is using the verbs and the transitions and voice and style and how they're hooking readers at the very beginning and satisfying readers at the end. So it's very important not just to read what you love to write or what you'd love to write, but to notice it, pay and study it. And it's hard. Like, it's really hard to not just relax and enjoy the book, but to actually learn from it. So that's a huge thing for aspiring writers. And also, you have to practice your craft. Like, learn from the editors. If you're lucky enough to have an editor who says, okay, this is how you can improve this paragraph, then you should, I think you should be thankful and grateful to that editor, because they're telling you, this is how to be a better writer. This is how you're going to get your next assignment if you do these things to improve that paragraph. So, yeah, I think you should, if you have editors who are going to help you, definitely pay attention to them.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Lori. This has been a real pleasure and very informative, too.
Thanks for having me.
For our listeners. And you've been listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. Our guest today has been Lori Pollock-Kinlan from Canada, a freelance writer with lots of credits to her name. And if you missed part of this, try again Monday morning at 8 a.m. You can listen online or live on KRUU 100.1 FM. And we will close today with a quote from Mom.
Okay, I like this one. Now stop and think about this. Be where you are, otherwise you will miss most of your life.
And thank you, Lori. And
no problem. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And see everybody else next week on Writer's Voices.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.